mates. Hi, everyone. How is Movie World? I missed it. Was it good? It was worth it? Awesome. So you guys are very clearly the hardcore ones. Last session of Ignite, and there's this little voice in your brain that says, what I really need right now is level 400 on JSON. Absolutely. Yeah, go. All right, so let's get stuck into it. Who has worked with Azure Resource Manager, knows a little bit about it, wants to find out more, et cetera? Presumably it's everyone. Awesome. Azure Resource Manager, for those of you who don't know, is essentially Microsoft's version 2 infrastructure. So the classic model, Azure Service Management, is effectively V1. Don't do your work in V1 anymore. The push is all to V2. It offers a number of advantages over V1, specifically things like parallel deployment of resources, role-based access control over resources, tagging, so that you can get a very good billing sense of who's using what and how and why. Very nice. And the biggest one is that you can do templated deployments. Now, it's not a templated deployment in the sense of here is some PowerShell code and I go and deploy that. We could do that with version 1. With version 2, we have a little bit of PowerShell, or maybe we don't use PowerShell at all and we use Azure command line interface if you're leveraging Windows or Mac or Linux, and we point our command or a shell at a template. That template could be locally or it could be up in it could be up in Azure, or it could be up on a source control repository like GitHub. It then has all of the necessary information to go off and talk to Azure Resource Manager to do the deployment that we want. And there are loads and loads of smarts embedded into that. But in order to get stuck into it, it's worth doing a deep dive, which is what we're going to do, as to the structure of a template, how it actually functions, and what are some of the things that you can do with it, and what are some of the pitfalls that you can avoid. So, ARM templates are all based on JSON. They're all written in JSON, which is JavaScript object notation, I think. It has quite a simple structure, although a complicated template looks like a dog's breakfast. It is actually ordered in a very structured manner. It just takes a little bit of getting used to. We've got our opening and closing brackets. We have a schema. The schema is online, and it tells Azure Resource Manager which version of Microsoft's ARM schema we're going to be using. I will talk a little bit more about schemas later. Then we've got a content version. This is for your information only. So if you put in a version 1.1, Azure isn't going to say, no, I must run on 1.2. This is an internal thing for your use. Then we pass in some parameters. Think of this as a PowerShell function. There is certain information that that function is going to need to do its job, which it can't work out for itself. So it needs you to tell it. That's your parameter. Then we've got a variable. In classic sense, our variables often are static, which really helps. But variables are information which the template or the function is going to need, which will either be defined within the template itself or built up based on parameters. And the core part is resources. This is a large array of all the various resources that we want this template to deploy. So we're looking at VNets, we're looking at virtual machines, we're looking at extensions, load balancers, availability sets, all that fun stuff. And depending on the nature of the template that we're going to use, we will also leverage an output. So, a resource is of a particular type. In this case, it could be a storage account, VM, etc. We're going to give it a name. Now, we can build up the names of our various resources from parameters that we've passed in. So, in this case, I've got a parameter for a new storage account name, and that's the one it's going to use when it builds up my storage account. I need to specify an API version. This is, again, part of the schema. The API version dictates what functionality is available to you. Now, the good thing is that the API versions and the schemas that are associated with them are all up on GitHub, and I'll throw up the URL in a sec. And we also need to specify a location. Where's our resource actually going to go? And by location, I mean, which Azure region? Is it in Australia East, Southeast, West US? What's occurring? Now, I could just pass that in directly as a variable or a parameter, but I'm deploying a resource into a resource group. JSON has the ability, or ARM, has the ability to pull that location information out and pass it back in as a variable or as a value. So as you start building up your templates, you can see that there are a number of areas where rather than specifying a parameter or specifying a variable, you can use internal smarts to build those up instead. And then we require properties for our resource. Every resource has a different property type. If it's a virtual machine, it's going to be what's your operating system, where's the disk, what's the network interface attached to it, and so on. In this case, for a storage account, I simply want to know what's the storage account type. So is it locally redundant storage, is it geo-replicated, and so on. That's where the schema stuff is. It's all up on GitHub. It is worth jumping on to Git. Who uses source control now for their infrastructure? Yeah, it's few. Not uncommon. I was at the Midwest Management Summit last week in Minneapolis, and the idea of source control is a fairly new thing because we have never had to think of our infrastructure as code before. Once you start looking at your infrastructure, and instead of seeing disks and networks and switches and VMs and servers, you see resources that need to be defined and configured via code, then the idea of bringing in things like source control suddenly makes a lot more sense. If you haven't used source control before, GitHub has a desktop agent, which is actually pretty good, so it's a nice UI. I'd recommend downloading and installing that, even though most Git purists will slap you for using a UI. I use one shamelessly, simply because there's a lot going on behind the scenes with source control, so it can be a very good way to find out or to get a visual on all those interactions. It also means if you clone that one down or any others, you can keep up to date with the changes, which is really useful. So, parameters. This is the stuff that the template can't figure out for itself. We need to tell it. So an example would be a Windows Server edition. Because I'm going to install a Windows VM, I need to tell it which version of Windows I'm going to actually install. It has a type, which is a string. It could be an integer, it could be an array, it could be base64, whatever. But at this point, it is specified. So that means whatever gets passed to that parameter, if it doesn't conform to the type that it is expecting, it will throw an error. You can specify a default value. This is really useful, and I'll explain why later. But by default, if you enact a deployment against a template, and there's a parameter that it's expecting, and that parameter is not provided, the deployment waits for your input. So if it's in PowerShell, you go, yep, that's nice. What's your Windows Server edition? If you provide a default value, it will use that instead of prompting you, which is really convenient because you can also pass in, if you wanted to, a parameter that was different. Maybe you don't want a 2012 R2. Maybe you want another one. By using allowed values, you can specify a range of strings or integers that are going to be acceptable to that parameter. So you couldn't pass in a parameter that says whatever you work it out. Okay, not going to work. And then finally, just because we should, we throw in metadata about that parameter and a description. This is especially useful, so get into the habit of doing this because every time you write code, you need to work on the assumption that someone else is going to read it. And if you don't have this sort of human-friendly metadata in there, it makes it really, really hard. So, parameters. rather than specifying a parameter manually for each one, that could get really, really tiresome, really tedious. So what we can do instead is specify a parameter's file. So we've got a JSON template which talks about our deployment, and then another file, again, it's a JSON, which has all of the parameters that we wish to pass in. Now, again, it has a schema and a content version. And it's a fairly simple structure. We simply say, these are the parameters. Vim name prefix, give it a value. This is just value key pairs. Okay? So it's just a list of strings, list of integers, and you can pass those in. The advantage of this is that if you want to go and redo a deployment, rather than having to specify all the parameters all over again, you just go back and look at the file, the parameters file, and you say, oh, okay, well, I want to change the prefix to something else now, but you don't need to go back and edit the deployment template, because the deployment template is expecting a parameter, but hopefully you followed best practice and you haven't hard-coded in any values into the deployment template, so your parameters file acts as that source of truth. Variables, this one's fun. And by fun, I mean not fun. Variables should be, again, if you think about a PowerShell function, a variable is something that is a resource that you're going to need at some point while the deployment is operational. Okay? Now, what we see, or what you often see, is PowerShell code where variables have been statically defined within a function. So what does that mean? It means that your function is not really reusable. Because the next time someone else comes along and they want to use your function, but they want to use it for something slightly different, they have to go in and modify the function. It isn't reusable code. What should occur is that the function is effectively standalone, parameters are passed in, and then variables are built up dynamically based upon those parameters. So in this case, I have a variable of an ID for a virtual network. And that has been built up from an existing parameter, virtual network name. And JSON understands that I can go and grab the resource ID from the Microsoft.NET virtual network and append the virtual network name that I've already specified. And then it can extract that, which is much better than doing a search and finding what the ID is and then hard coding that back in. Similarly, if I want to generate a subnet reference because I'm going to build a subnet as part of my deployment, I can take a number of variables, in this case, the VNet ID, which I just made, another parameter, subnet name, and I can run a concatenate against them so that when the deployment runs, what it's actually going to be using is a string which is VNet ID /subnet/subnet name. Sometimes, however, you can hard code a value into a variable. It is acceptable. Because an example is that, let's say you were going to do a deployment of a Windows virtual machine as opposed to a Linux one. Some of the values which are needed for Windows are not the same as those which are needed for Linux. Okay, so for Windows, you might need the image version or the image publisher. You do for Linux as well, but then they're not going to be the same. For Linux, it'll be Canonical or Red Hat. For Windows, it's going to be Microsoft. So you can hard code it when you need to. Now, let's say we've got a template. We've built it up. We've got some parameters. How do we actually trigger it? What do we do? Now, the first thing we can do is leverage Azure PowerShell. Now, who's been using Azure PowerShell? Have you updated to the 1.01 version? It has something in it which will break everything you've ever done, which is really fun. They change the commandlet name. So you see there it's got new Azure RM Resource Manager. The RM is new. So previously, if your script was new Azure Resource Group Deployment, all of a sudden, it's going to go, I can't find that commandlet anymore. It's dead. So you have to retrospectively go back and fix up all of your scripts. really fun. That came in when it changed from the 0.0 versions to the 1.0, which came out 2 weeks ago, I believe. Okay. So I'm going to specify a new deployment. I'll give it a name. The name is just so that I can keep track of the deployment. Okay. There's nothing magical about it. I will specify the name of the resource group that I wish to deploy it into. And I'm going to pull that out of a variable that already exists. Okay. Then I simply specify a template file, the one that I've already built. Now, this can be locally on my machine. It could be up in source control, in which case, instead of template file, it would be template URI. And I can also then pass through my parameters file. And that's kind of it. That's doing a deployment. Now, that can be a deployment of 20 virtual machines with network adapters behind an internet-facing load balancer in different availability sets. Okay. That is as complicated as it gets from a triggering perspective. So think about where Microsoft is moving to with a number of things, especially around Azure automation. Okay. What this allows you to do is to take your imperative form of stating, this is what I want my infrastructure to be, and here is a load of code that tells the service management API how to get there. Rather than that, we can say, here is my code which will tell Resource Manager to go and look at a deployment, and I simply want to define what my infrastructure is going to look like. I'm not going to tell it how to get there. So this means is that it's reusable over and over again. The additional parameters, you can just see that right at the bottom, additional parameters, that's what we call a hash table. This is not a uniquely Azure Resource Manager thing. This is just a PowerShell thing, and it will work with any function, any script, any time. The reason that we are likely to use it in Azure Resource Manager is when we want to pass values through which need to be encrypted, for argument's sake. So I've done a reasonable amount of work with Chef in Azure. And the Chef VM extension is one of those really, really cool ones that allows you to provision a virtual machine and then bootstrap it to the Chef server, which then jumps into the server and configures it how you want to. So it's a web server, a SQL server, whatever. But certain values, like admin password or the validation key, which is a private key, they really need to be encrypted. I'm not keen on passing those through in plain text. And unfortunately, JSON can't do a decryption. So a couple of times I've passed through a secure string, and the value from JSON's perspective is secure string. So my passwords for all my virtual machines for a time was secure string. Really useful. So when we break it out into a hash table and then pass it through using PowerShell, the Azure Resource Manager API can do the decryption for you and then pass them through so they never need to touch the JSON template at all. And then we simply call it using an ampersand rather than a dollar sign. That's also called splatting. Has anyone heard of splatting in PowerShell? You define a load of variables. You talk to your commandlet and you go, my parameters are splat, those. So, yeah, the story behind splatting is actually, you know, it's like a kid playing with a mud pie. All right. And if we wanted to do the same in CLI, it's even easier. Azure group create, give it a name, give it a location, specify the file, give it a deployment name, specify the parameters file. That's it. Really, really straightforward. All right. Let's actually do a deployment. So, this is a basic implementation of ARM. I'm using Visual Studio for this. I'll talk more about the tools that are available to do this kind of work a little later on. But if you've got access to Visual Studio, start there. It's actually got some really, really good features which will make life a lot easier. The structure of the template is a little bit more fleshed out, but it's still that basic structure. I'm passing parameters in. I have my variables. And I've lost my mouse. Yay. Expand it out. I've got a load of variables, most of which are built up dynamically. And then I've got the actual resources which I'm going to deploy as part of this. So storage account, public IP, VNet, network interface, and a virtual machine. Now, most of those resources could still be in place. Okay, so I could have already run through this in the past. And the storage account is there, the virtual network is there. What I'm doing is I'm saying, in order for a virtual machine to function, these are the things it needs. If they're not there, go and make them. If they are there, just keep going, because you're fine. So one of the awesome things with ARM is incremental deployments. So if I've already got a storage account, a VNet, a subnet, and all I need to do is recreate the virtual machine, it won't go and say, aha, you need a storage account. I'll go and make that for you. It goes, no, it's already there. We're fine. So your deployments start to get a lot faster. So I'm going to cut over to, is that the right one? Yes, it is. So that's my deployment script, which let's give it a location. Call it Australia East. And away we go. It wants an admin password. Now, I could, if I wanted to, have written some PowerShell that would generate an admin password and then prompt that in as a secure string. However, because the template is expecting a particular parameter and that parameter is empty, that's why it's prompting me for it now. So give it a password. It'll go through and validate the template. If there are any problems at that point in time, it will spit out an error at you. And the awesome thing is that it can go through and run these in parallel. So you can see the first thing it started to do was to do the virtual network, the public IP, and the storage account, because they don't depend upon each other. A public IP can exist without a VNet being there. A storage account can exist without a public IP being there. Dependencies are one of the things that you define in the template. What you're saying is, look, these are the things I need before a particular resource can be provisioned. Let's say a virtual machine. It needs a storage account. It needs a VNet. It needs a NIC. But the other stuff, no dependency. It's fine. So off you go and build those up in parallel. So if I jump across to my portal, look at the resource groups. This is my MSAU Ignite resource group, which has just been deployed. And I've got resources that are being built up into there. So I've already, the virtual machine's already being built. The NIC is in there, public IP is in there, virtual network is in there, storage account's in there. Now, if for some reason there was a problem with the virtual machine, I could go away and erase that one particular resource, leave everything else in there, rerun the script, and it's just going to jump through and say, oh, storage account's there, NIC's there, public IP is there, dun, 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 and it'll just focus on the bit that it needs to. And it's in parallel. Has anyone tried to do that thing with Service Manager? Sorry, Azure Service Management, so in manage.windowsazure.com, where you go to delete a virtual machine, then you go to delete another one at the same time, and it goes, no, the storage account's locked. You can't do a thing, okay? That isn't true here. It's awesome. You can shut down everything at once. You can erase everything at once. Everything runs in parallel. You don't get those lockups, which makes it really, really easy. Occasionally, just occasionally, ARM asks you to wait for an undisclosed period of time while it does something random that it never tells you about. Normally, that occurs when I'm demoing on stage. Hopefully, it won't occur to you. All right. And when that's done, so pretty much everything is running in succeeded mode, it is deploying the virtual machine, and then eventually it'll spit that out and say, yep, we're good. We're good to go. Yes? So the question is, can you run multiple scripts to do the same thing again? Yes, you actually probably could. What you would probably need to change the deployment name, because at the moment there is a deployment running, and it has a particular name. Okay, now that name is more for management and visibility. But if you tried to do another one at the same time with the same name, it's going to go, which one do you want? No, this one already exists, and it's in a running state. But if you changed it and said, okay, I want to keep everything exactly the same, I might change the virtual machine name, okay, as a parameter, as an input. I'll change the deployment name. I might increment it by one, and then I'll rerun the same script. Yeah, absolutely.
What I mean is, like, if I'm going to create 20 virtual machines, right?
Yep. Ah, okay. So if you want to do multiples. If you want to do multiples, the good thing is you don't need to run the same script 20 times, or you don't need to spin up 20 instances of PowerShell in order to do that. ARM has the ability, which I'll show you in a sec, so you're preempting me, well done, but it has the ability for you to say, this is what I want, and this is how many instances of it that I want. And it will go and do that for you in parallel, which is even better. So keep pressing on. Any questions on what we've seen so far? You're all being really quiet. I'm assuming it's because you went hard at Movie World and you're all tired.
How does it tell if a resource has already been deployed?
How does it tell if a resource has already been deployed? Through a set of ARM providers that are available for querying through the ARM REST API. So if you say to it, I want you to go and deploy this particular block of code, and there's a storage account in there, it will work out what that name is. Okay, so it is called Microsoft.storage/storage account. Okay, that is a particular name. It's got a unique name. So at some point, there will be a Microsoft.storage provider in your Azure sub, and it has that name on it. So the first thing it does is check to see if it's already there. If it is, and it can pull out all of the necessary information, so the resource ID, location, it's obviously a good one, and it says, no, it's fine. It's all good. We don't need to do any more. So there is a check before the deployment occurs. All right, so we're doing some deployments. Some of the initial scripts or the initial templates that you're probably working with will be heavy on the parameters, heavy on the variables. They won't use a lot of functions in them, but it's absolutely worth working out what those functions are. Now, don't need to screenshot everything, but the list of available functions is available online. There's about 40, 42 of them at the moment, I think. What I'm discovering is that Microsoft is actually really, really good at Azure documentation in terms of keeping it fresh. So if you go through the azure.microsoft.com and the articles that are available to you, an old one is maybe a month old. That's an old one, okay? A new one was updated earlier on today because everything is being back-ended by source control. So all the documentation's available on GitHub. And Microsoft actively encourages you to read through the documentation, and if there are any problems, submit a pull request. So you can write the documentation. Pretty cool. Functions are things like add, concatenation, pulling out the resource ID, the resource group, and so on. It allows you to start building up variables within your template that don't otherwise exist. You pass parameters in and then build up new variables and use those. So exactly the same as a PowerShell function. It reduces your reliance on static variables, which is a really, really good thing, if I haven't already mentioned that. There are a number, one of the things that ARM is suffering from at the moment is an abundance of example-driven documentation. If you want to do this one thing, here is a template that will allow you to do this one thing. It's an example of functionality, yes, but it's not reusable. So often, when you find a template that does what you want it to, but you want to make it reusable, there's a lot of editing that goes into it, pulling out assumptions which have been defined as static variables. Multiple resources. This is the one that you want. So I have a template. It does a thing. I want it to do that thing many, many times over. What do? I can throw in a count parameter. And I can give that a default value. You see that the type is an integer, isn't a string. And then when I build up my resource, I can throw in, I can call a function called copyIndex. So what I've told it to do is go through and iterate based upon the count. I've told it a copy, here's a name of the copy function, and the count number is a parameter called count. And what that means is that this section of the template, I want you to do however many times the default value or the count parameter has been passed in. Okay, it's as simple as that. So you can use the same template to produce one virtual machine or 50. You can incorporate that count parameter into every single one that you do and just make the default value 1. And then at a later stage, when you wish to pass in a different parameter, you don't need to edit the template. You can simply pass in a parameter of a higher value. Nice and easy. If you'd hard-coded it as a variable, you couldn't do that. You'd have to go in and edit the template itself. No good. It also means that we can call out things. So if you see under resources name, it's got concatenate example copy dash copy index. So as it's running through the iterations, it understands which one it's up to, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and so on. So each time it runs through it, the name will be example copy dash 0, example copy dash 1, 2, 3, 4, and so on. Yes? Sorry, I missed that? So the question is, how many templates can you chain together? You mean linking external templates into a master one? I'll talk about it later, but it's about 5 deep. Yep, so no, it isn't an unlimited chain. There should be almost nothing that you'd need to do that would go beyond 5 deep, although at 640K was enough for everyone, apparently, so who knows. All right, so let's look at what a multiple resource deployment she looks like. Switching across to a different tool, this is Atom. So this is a demo that I did yesterday talking about resilient Azure architecture. It's a template which I wish it was mine because it's really cool, but it's not. And what it's designed to do is to spin up multiple virtual machines and then put the operating system disk into separate storage containers. Okay? But only two. So I've got two storage accounts. I've got a number of VMs. And I want OS disk 1 to go there, 2 to go there, 3 to go there, 4 to go there, and so on. It's called sharding. So that from a resilience perspective, if one of those storage accounts for whatever reason is unavailable, the other one is, and because my virtual machines are in an availability set, my workloads stay up. Okay. So it's a nice example, but it's also a good use of how to use the instance count. Now the actual variable, it can be called count, it can be called instance count, it can be called whatever you want to, okay, but the idea behind it is exactly the same. It just has a count number. You provide it with an integer. And then when it goes through and does its build, again, we're going to spin up a name. And that is a concatenation of, well, in this case, it's a hard-coded variable, but it's a lab example. And then it's going to dash it with the index. So I'll get Nick frontend 0, Nick frontend 1, and 2, 3, 4, and so on. And then I've got my copy parameter in there. And it's just going to flesh that out. So I've got 7 instances of this. And all I've got to do is change that integer. It's also a nice example of parallel deployment. Oh, so that one's done. At the end of a deployment, you get the output of what was actually done. Okay? Anything that you've passed through as a secure string, like the admin password, isn't shown. Yay. You know that it failed if the value there is secure string, because it's gone in as a string, and the string is secure string, which normally means that something hasn't worked. Or it means that you've spun up this awesome infrastructure that you pretty much can't log onto. No fun. Although, with an incremental deployment, you could fix that quite easily. So instead of that, let's do not that one. That's the one. So that's my demo Linux one. And I want to do a loop. So cloud loop. Oh, here we go. Provided resource group does not exist. Yes, I know that. That's why I created it. That's OK. Easily worked out. All of the code that I'm using within my demos is going to be up on Git. So you'll be able to access all of this yourself. So, all right. So what I've done here, this is the code. And rather than using new, I use get, which is a problem because it doesn't exist. So all I've got to do is change it to new. Go back to here. That should be it. Location. Why are you asking for a location? You know what's awesome? This worked yesterday. That's OK. We'll try it on a slightly different one. That's my sharding demo. So all right. You know what? That's actually not going to function as I wanted it to. What it does, the structure of it is exactly the same. Okay, so it's a very simple call to an existing template, and it just iterates through that loop. Would have been nice to show, but obviously I've made some changes, and those changes ain't happy. So that's all right. We can go back later and check that out. So, template linking. Linking templates is what we start to do when we really want to get into reusable code. Okay, so when we've got a template that defines everything that we want, and then on one of those instances, we want to make a change to a particular resource. Say we want to handle the way that we do storage accounts a bit differently. But we've already provisioned a load of templates that use exactly the same code block. That's going to be painful for us to go back and retrospectively change all of those templates. So rather than do that, what we can do is actually link out to external ones. So we've got our master, we've got parameters, we've got variables, and then one of the resources that we want is storage. Rather than define our storage resource within the master, we can hook that out to a separate one. And we might do the same for our virtual network. Those are held externally. So a linked template doesn't sit on your local hard disk or on a file server. It sits in source control. It must be externally accessible. So that's going to sit in either in GitHub as like a raw GitHub user so that it can read that JSON information natively, or can set up in Azure storage. So if at a later stage we want to handle the way that we do storage a bit differently, all we need to go through is to modify that one external template, and every master template that we have that talks to that will instantly use that latest version. Okay? It's very, very neat. Now, the reason that we do this is for something called deconstruction. This is part of Microsoft best practice for building ARM templates. Yes, you can have a template and a template file, and between them, they will do everything that you need, but you don't have a system that is especially robust. So Microsoft's idea, and this obviously takes a lot more work to implement, but the idea is that you've got your parameters that sit externally. You pass those into your main template. Template metadata sits external to that. That template then passes down those parameters to linked resources. So there might be a template for resources that are shared between everything, optional resources, known configuration resources, and it just goes down from there. Now that's nesting down to about 4 deep, so that's all cool. Now this takes a significant chunk of work in order to implement, but it's absolutely worth looking at. There's a lot that goes on behind the scenes in order to make that possible. The master template can pass parameters down to a link template easily enough, but the link template via outputs can pass parameters back up to the master so that there is actually a two-way flow of information between them. Now, two demos that are going to work. Of course they're going to work. All right. So the first one is using nesting. So if I take a look at the account that I have, which is a demo nest. So again, it's just a virtual machine template, nothing amazingly special about it. But when I go down, I've got a couple of variables in here. So for the storage template and the network template, those are pulling down JSON files from GitHub. Okay, so that the idea is that when I get down further into the template and I want to call out my resource, that's my template link. So I'm not defining all of the resource properties within my master. I'm saying no, all of that information is actually somewhere else. So you go and jump out and grab that. Let's take a look at what that actually looks like. Give it a password. Now, in terms of what the deployment looks like, it's pretty much the same, except this is the bit that's changed. Previously, for networking and for storage, it would have used a different provider. It would have actually, well, it's going to use these providers, virtual networks and storage accounts. But first, it has to understand that it's actually got to go and deploy them. So unlike a template, which has everything in it, nested ones go off and trigger deployments of their own first up. So this is going to run through and do its thing. So it's actually going quite fast. Yay. Let's make up for the other one. And then if we wanted to do something that brings everything together, I have another template. Which again is very similar, but it's got that resource. It's got a Chef extension in there. Thinking about infrastructure as code in Azure means that we need to change how we think about how our resources are deployed and configured. VMs in Azure have the ability for you to attach extensions to them. Extensions provide you with some sort of functionality, boot diagnostics, or PowerShell DSC, or in this case, Chef. Now, ARM will get your infrastructure out there, and it will deploy it, and it'll do it in an incremental manner, really, really awesome. What it won't do is configure that infrastructure for you, in the sense of it won't go and install IIS, it won't go and copy files. Okay, that's not what ARM does. That is what DSC does, what Puppet does, or what Chef does. And ARM can tell your VMs, hey, you should be talking to Chef, or you should be talking to Puppet. I will configure you, and then I'll give you the next step of what you need to do to get yourself configured. So, what this will do is it will build the virtual machine, and then finally it will tell it to get the Chef extension installed, and it will give it everything it needs to go and get that agent bootstrapped. At that point, the machine can talk to Chef server and say, hey, I've been told to report in, what have you got? And then it's going to get instantly built. So let's do that one. Okay, that one's actually fine. All it's saying is that the resource group already exists, and it just threw an error because there was no error handling attached to that. The deployment's actually going to carry on just fine. Okay, our other one, I think I saw. Nope, still going. What you tend to find is that the Windows deployments do take a little bit longer because they do have to run through a sysprep. So, if you are looking at spinning up demos in Azure and you just want to do it really, really rapidly, a good way to do it is actually to use Linux or Ubuntu, because the virtual machines come online really, really fast. All right. Doing good. Does anyone have any questions on what we've seen today? Yes, sir. So the question is, if you're using ARM or if we're using whatever platform we're using to call in DSC or Chef or Puppet, what's the future for Config Manager? This is being recorded, so I don't know what I can say. I think you may have answered that question simply by asking it. I'll put it like that. From Microsoft's perspective, Config Manager is for end-user compute. It's not for servers, okay? And it's definitely not for Azure. So I wouldn't expect to see it have a place in infrastructure configuration anyway. There are some larger questions about what the implications are for the System Center stack in general. And yes, those are very relevant questions. I'll put it like that. So did someone else have their hand up? I think, yes, hi.
While you were talking, I was thinking how I could practice all this stuff. And then one of the next questions popped up, who is going to pay the cost for that practicing, right? So I was wondering, what sort of cost is attached to building environments using this and so on?
OK, so I want to practice it. Who's going to pay for it? Is that about it? Okay. So the costs are actually very minimal, because who attended Rick's session late yesterday on, Azure only costs you a lot of money if you keep everything up and operational and running all the time, okay? I've got an MSDN subscription, so I get about $200 a month on Azure. I've spun up a significant amount of relatively expensive infrastructure, all of the, through throughout the various months, but it's only up for a few hours or maybe a few days, because when I'm learning this stuff or when I'm practicing it, I just need to spin it up, make sure that it works, and then power it down. I'm only paying for what I use. Okay. So in terms of who's going to pay for it, I would encourage you to pay for it yourself. But, Dev Test Labs in Azure? Yep, absolutely. So definitely start making use of it. It depends upon what you want to get started in. So I do predominantly infrastructure work. I don't tend to do application dev. I don't tend to work with platform as a service, web apps, SQL Azure, stuff like that. A lot of the development in Azure is sort of pitched around that rather than infrastructure. However, you can obviously sign up for a 30-day trial of Azure. That gets you however much. I think it's about up to $250 to use. Somebody I know spun up one of the G series just to see how long their trial of Azure would last if they left that up. I think it was about an hour. It was impressive. But look, the absolute cost is really minimal. If you have the ability to charge it back on a card, that's the easiest way to go. But your actual costs of running infrastructure in Azure are directly linked to how long you leave them up and operational for. Okay, so if for Ignite, I've left them up for the week because I need them. Okay, but then after this is done, everything gets powered off and I'm not being charged. But in terms of other resources and other tools that you can use to start learning this stuff, you've preempted me because that's what I wanted to talk about. So I'm using Visual Studio for a lot of this stuff. As an infrastructure guy, I have never needed to use Visual Studio before. And so it's a massive learning curve, but getting started with Azure Resource Manager is a very good reason, if you've never picked up Visual Studio before, to start using it. It hooks directly into the Azure APIs. It will pull down all the necessary templates for you. They're all pre-configured. They are developed certainly in a Visual Studio style manner. So if you wanted to make them reusable for absolutely everyone who doesn't have Visual Studio, yeah, okay, you might need to do a little bit of work. But from a learning perspective, and the IntelliSense from within the JSON is spectacular. Definitely worth it if you have it. Obviously, it's a very expensive tool. Microsoft have released their open source tool, Visual Studio Code, that was released maybe a couple of weeks ago. That is cross-platform, works on Windows and Mac. I think it works on Linux too, actually. Yeah, it does. All right, awesome. Still a work in progress, but definitely download that and install it. It's worth using. Atom is excellent. If you don't know Atom, get that and download it. Again, it's cross-platform, it's open source, and has loads and loads of plugins that make your development experience a lot nicer. Also, the venerable Notepad++ with a JSON Viewer plugin actually works really, really nicely, because as you're building your JSON code, it actually shows you the structure of what you are actually making at the time. Azure Resource Visualizer is something that's very new. I'll show it to you in a sec. Really, really cool. As you're building up your JSONs, obviously there is a visual structure of infrastructure behind the scenes, but you need to keep that visualization in your head. If you're used to Visio, this is for you, okay? Because it actually shows you what infrastructure is being built. And something that's incredibly new is the Azure Resource Explorer. I believe this is a Microsoft tool. And what this allows you to do is to connect to your Azure sub and to navigate through the various resources, various providers, and see the underlying JSON code and actually edit it live. So if you have deployed a virtual machine via a template and there was an error, a mistake, rather than redeploy it, you could, in theory, go into Azure Resource Manager and just change the code live. Obviously, lockdown, who can access that? And there's also an open source project called the ARM Client. It is a command line tool, though there is a UI in there as well, that allows you to query the Azure Resource Manager REST API directly. So similar to Resource Explorer, but if you wanted to do it from the command line, that's how. All right, next steps, what do you do? There is a white paper. I will send around the link to this after, but if you do a search on world-class templates, it's written by Microsoft. It goes through in excruciating detail all of the best practices and goes into a lot of depth about the functionality within within ARM that allows you to achieve it. Okay, it's about 70 pages. It's well worth looking through several times. I read it for the first time, and it's like, yep, don't know, don't know, don't know. That bit's interesting, and you just keep going back to it. It's a very, very good resource. There are a load of quick start templates on Azure. Most of these are not written by Microsoft. They're written by the community. So if you want to write and submit some yourself, absolutely go for it. They're all nice in that they've all got the deploy to Azure button on them. So what that means is that you click deploy to Azure, and it redirects you to your Azure portal and goes through the build process. Okay? Really, really nice. However, this is the bit I'm talking about, example-driven deployment or example-driven documentation. These are all predominantly one-shot templates. They're designed to do one particular thing. They do it very, very well. But if you're looking for reusable code, this is not the place. You go here, you find out what can be done, and then you need to do a fair bit of editing in order to get reusable code. And read the doco. The Azure doco put out by Microsoft is actually excellent. Resource Manager came out properly in May. I was at the MVP Summit 2 weeks ago and attended the Azure track there. And everyone is really fired up about ARM. The speed of development behind the scenes is absolutely staggering. The problem is that often the documentation doesn't keep up with the speed of dev. And so there's a load of MVPs saying, you know, hey, we love ARM, this is brilliant. Where can we go to find out what's actually possible? Where's the documentation for XYZ? And you go, yeah, it's coming, it's coming. But you can read everything on Git. It also means that you could subscribe to that particular Git repository and download all the documentation if you felt so inclined. MVA has a fair bit of awesome stuff. There have been some very good presentations recently on Channel 9 on ARM, especially at Ignite North America and Ignite New Zealand, so check those out. And that's all from me on ARM. Now, can I ask you guys, let's get a bit of feedback, because ARM is new, the templating stuff is new. A lot of this stuff from an infrastructure perspective are things that we haven't necessarily encountered as Microsoft infrastructure guys. Is this about the level that you were hoping for? Is this useful? Was it too light? Did it have context? Apart from the demos that didn't work, which had nothing to do with me and everything to do with the fact that ARM is new. So yeah, what are your thoughts? I'm keen to know. It was about right? Okay, awesome. So when you're working with ARM, and as you go through the documentation, you'll notice on most Microsoft pages now, there's a block of text right at the top that says, this document talks about how to do things from a classic perspective and from an ARM perspective, but we don't recommend you do the classic method anymore. We recommend you do ARM version. So Microsoft is very much pushing everyone down this path. So if Azure infrastructure is something that you're interested in, I would go so far as to say just ignore everything in version 1 at this point in time. It's not going to be the thing moving forwards. Microsoft has everything in the bag on ARM being the way forward. It is complicated, it is new, it exposes us to tools and methodologies that we've never necessarily used before. Certainly, I've found that myself. The biggest tip is think of your infrastructure as code. That's quite a paradigm shift for most of us, definitely myself. But once you start thinking of it as code, this stuff really makes sense. And it opens up new processes and new methodologies that make your everyday jobs significantly easier. So, all right, you've been really, really good. Thank you. We're done. Hope you had a great Ignite.